Well, it's good to be back. I suppose most of you will realise that I've been away, well, on holiday, for a couple of weeks. And it's really nice to be back amongst you, feeling quite rested, which is good. I chose this passage about 3 or 4 weeks before I was due to go on leave, and we thought we'd got it planned out really well. We looked at Jude, didn't we, the couple of weeks before. And Jude is a book that talks all about bad shepherds and bad leaders and how we can recognise good leaders within the church. And for my holiday, I was due to be going on quite a worky holiday, really. I was due to be going away with Release International. But that didn't happen, and more about that later. And so this is not the sermon I was planning to preach. This passage works beautifully in the light of what I thought I was going to be doing. But God's word is alive and living, and we'll see what he has to say to us in spite of all that. So this is not the kind of sermon that I was expecting to bring to you today, and it's probably not the kind of sermon that would have scored me high marks in sermon class back at Spurgeon's either. But it is the product of me seeking to understand what God's been saying to me in the last 2 weeks, in the hope that that might help you too. This time last year, we were on holiday again. We were up in Scotland preparing for our daughter's wedding. Can't believe it's been a year I've been married. And we have many, many happy memories of that day. It was a glorious day in all respects. But one of the happiest memories from it is something that Helen and Lou did for every single guest at their wedding. And there was about 135 of them, so there was a lot. Every single guest on their place when they came to sit down had a crafted note to them, thanking them for being at their wedding and thanking them for something wonderful that they'd brought into their lives. It took them months. They were all printed out on nice cards, all fitted with the colour scheme and everything, and we didn't know anything about it. So consequently, as people sat down at the tables, there was a hush, and then there were a few sniffs and a few snivels as people really got quite emotional about what Helen and Lou had written to them, thanking them for their input in their lives. And Alan and I have kept ours. They're a bit tear-stained. But Helen's wedding note to me said several lovely things. But one of the things that it said, which was very, very special to me, was it said, "Thank you, Mum, for showing me how to be graceful even when life has taken a funny turn." Well, we've had a few funny turns in our lives, as I'm sure many of you have. And I really hope that I can live up to those lovely words. I'm very grateful that in God's graciousness, that's what she thinks. But sometimes it's easier said than done, isn't it? To face graciously when life's taken a funny turn. And these last 2 weeks for me have been a bit of a funny turn. So just over 2 weeks ago, I was expecting to go to South Korea. Some of you knew where I was going. We very deliberately didn't make it a big broadcast because of what I was doing and who I was going with. I was going with my dear friend Em, who many of you have met. She came to talk to the women's breakfast. She's been and led Release Women's Things here. She works for Release. I've known her all my adult life. We met when we started nurse training together at 18, and we've been best mates ever since. I was going with her and Release Women to visit Christian women who had escaped from North Korea and had managed to settle in South Korea. I was also going somewhere else where to meet with people who'd done the same thing but who were in a decidedly more risky situation. 2 months before we were due to go on this trip, Emma rang me to tell me that her mum, Rose, who I've also known since I was 18, had been diagnosed with palliative cancer. So she wasn't going to get better. So 2 months before we were going on this trip, we knew, therefore, that Emma probably wouldn't be able to go if we thought the timescale worked out the way we thought it might. And so Emma was unperturbed. She said, "Oh, it's all right, Lise. You can do the stuff I was going to do." She's always very confident about my abilities, which is not always founded in fact. and I was prepped to stand into Emma's shoes to teach these dear ladies who had escaped from North Korea for being Christians, but actually, because of the inability to have any Bibles or any teaching or anything in North Korea, who needed Bible teaching. And that, you know, that's what they were receiving in South Korea. So I was prepped to go in and do that. And as Dave will tell you, it was a very up and down journey in terms of what we were doing, what we weren't doing. I was getting quite anxious about what I was going to be doing out there and whether I was going to be up to the job. But we kind of worked through all that. And then Emma felt that she definitely could go because her mum had picked up somewhat. So it was all back to plan A, having been through about plan B, C, D, E, and F in the preceding weeks. But then on the Tuesday before we were due to go, Emma rang me to say that her mum had taken a very definite turn for the worst, and I knew then at that point that she wouldn't be going. But on the Wednesday, as I was packing my suitcase and going through the list a million times about what I was supposed to take, I had a phone call to say that not only would Emma not be going, but that none of us would be going, all seven of us that were due to be going, none of us would be going, because of a real nervousness on the part of the partner that they were working with in South Korea. So instead of packing my suitcase, I unpacked it. And instead of having a very busy 9 days in this 2 weeks off from serving all of you, I suddenly had 2 empty weeks. This was a bit of a funny turn. I don't know if any of you have been in that experience where you've been psyching yourself up to something and then all of a sudden it doesn't happen and it's something you felt quite nervous about. So there's an element of relief, but there's also an element of disappointment. You've been psyching yourself up to this thing. And for 24 hours, I didn't quite know whether I was coming or going, to be honest. It was definitely a bit of a funny turn. So I wondered how best to deal with it with grace, as my daughter would want me to. But I also wondered what God was doing in it. And I'd chosen that passage in Ezekiel to preach on today because I thought I would be dealing with broken people who'd been the victims of incredibly evil shepherds. I don't know how much you know about North Korea. It's probably the top of the list of places you never, ever want to live. The people of North Korea are treated by their leaders in some of the worst ways possible. And it's shocking to us, even those of us who are in living memory of two world wars, maybe, some of the stuff that goes on there is bad even by those standards. The dictators that lead that land are just like those bad shepherds that we read about in Ezekiel. They grow fat while the people of North Korea starve to death. No one has any rights. Everyone from the age of 4 months is indoctrinated with the belief that not only is the leader the last word in everything in North Korea, he's also the creator of the world. It is a very, very sick country. And people of faith and people of no faith are persecuted and hounded. And those made in God's image are exploited and murdered in the name of a shepherd who claims to be part of a deity. It is not a good place. And if you struggle with how to pray for North Korea and other places like it, can I suggest that you turn to that passage in Ezekiel and pray that one day the Good Shepherd will reign again in North Korea. The whole of Korea, before it was divided up by two superpowers in that war in the 50s, was a very Christian country. It had been a very, very successful missionary effort to Korea. Many of the Christians fled from the north to the south when they saw what was coming, but many of them didn't. And so there is a memory of Christian things in North Korea. There are Christian people there surviving. So when you pray for them, so difficult to know what to pray for, isn't it? But turn to that passage in Ezekiel and pray that the Good Shepherd would one day be in charge of North Korea again. But if it's true that God's word is a living thing, a two-edged sword, daily bread for all walks of life, what does this passage have to say to me in the relative ordinariness of 2 weeks at home? Well, I prayed about what I should be doing in this unexpected free time. My 2 weeks went something like this. I visited my elderly aunt in her care home. I played with a friend's precious toddler in the new paddling pools in the park, in Casterbury Park. I shared an unexpected meal with my sister and her family. I enjoyed extra time with my children. Together, we made connections at the local pub, at the Coach and Horses, at the open night mic, and spent time talking to the landlord there. He expressed an interest in Messy Church and actually is quite keen to host Messy Church in his pub garden. I studied some Old Testament writing. I sat for a day with my friend Em and her mum Rose on the last day of her life on earth in the hospice. I spent quality time with Alan, and we were able to reflect and talk and walk together. Now, none of this seems earth-shattering, does it? What was God up to that he ordained that I should be here doing these things when clearly what we read in that passage from Ezekiel is that his mission is always to bind up the broken, call in the lost, feed the hungry? Ezekiel's prophecy is a beautiful précis of the whole of the biblical narrative. It is picture shorthand for the work that God has always done and will always be doing. And as Christians, we long to be part of that work, don't we? And yet, how do we cope when life takes a funny turn? When what we thought we would be doing, the thing we thought we could so clearly see as part of God's great mission, gets derailed and we end up doing something much more ordinary instead? As Emma and I sat and prayed and waited with Rose on Thursday last week, Em suddenly showed me a text that she had received completely out of the blue from one of their partners in Pakistan as a pastor over there. And he didn't know the situation that we were in or what had just happened with our trip to South Korea. He just thought he was sending some encouragement and some wisdom. But his text went like this: God upsets our plans only to set up his plans for us. Because we see present and plan our future, but he sees our future and plans our present. I'll read that again. God upsets our plans only to set up his plans for us. Because we see present and plan our future, but he sees our future and plans our present. It's an incredibly wise thing, isn't it? And so needed for both of us as we sat there wondering what on earth God's plans were and why we were here, facing for M real terrible loss. So often when our plans go awry, we think that somehow God has allowed us to miss the boat in the great work we can do for him, don't we? We feel all that disappointment and we're confronted with how little we can control our own lives. Sometimes the disappointment is so bad it leaves us broken and thwarted in our discipleship, and we doubt the power of the gospel and the truth of the mission we thought God had. We start to feel that rather than being healthy shepherds helping the great shepherd, we are in fact those injured and weak sheep that need binding up. One of the things that God has to constantly remind me of when I actually stop long enough to listen to him is that God can only work with us when we realise that we are those injured, weak sheep. The brokenness that Ezekiel describes in those sheep is the only way that we can come to God and be part of his rescue plan for the rest of the sheep. How do we know this? Because the great shepherd that Ezekiel describes, the servant David, is Jesus, the broken servant king. Jesus doesn't meet us in overpowering strength. He meets us in brokenness on a cross. He meets us in places where he promises to be broken, in the bread of the Last Supper and every breaking of bread celebration that has happened since. He meets us in the brokenness of a life laid down in baptism, in the fellowship of a group of broken believers. He meets us in the brokenness of our lost hopes and dreams and says to our crumpled spirits, "Now I can set up my plans for you." One of the things I was able to do because I was at home and on holiday was read, and I love to read. And if I was going to read one theological writer, it's very difficult to choose one, isn't it? But actually it would be this lady, Barbara Brown Taylor. She is a fantastic preacher and a wonderful writer. And this book, which I'm halfway through, is a collection of her reflections and sermons. And I wanted to just read a little bit to you. It's where she's describing how Jesus met the disciples on the Emmaus Road. It's one of the stories I love because it's so easy to relate to those broken, disappointed people, isn't it? We often feel like that. They can't see the wood for the trees. They're walking along. They're so despondent because everything they've worked towards with Jesus has appeared to just be broken and gone. And Jesus meets them on the road and starts to talk to them. And they don't know who he is until they invite him in, and he sits at the table and breaks the bread, and all of a sudden they realise that it's him. But this is how Barbara Brown Taylor describes that story. "The blindness of the two disciples does not keep their Christ from coming to them. He does not limit his post-resurrection appearances to those with full confidence in him. He comes to the disappointed, the doubtful, the disconsolate. He comes to those who do not know their Bibles, who do not recognize him even when they are walking right beside him. He comes to those who have given up and are headed back home," which makes this whole story a story about the blessedness of brokenness. Maybe that is only good news if you happen to be broken. If you are not, then I guess it would be better news to hear a story about those who believed in God might be able to skip right over the broken part and go straight to the wholeness part. But that does not seem to be the case. Jesus seems to prefer working with broken people, with broken dreams in a broken world. If someone hands him a whole loaf, he will take it, bless it, break it, and give it. And he will do the same thing with his own flesh and blood, because that is the way of life God has shown him to show the rest of us, to take what we have been given, whether we like it or not, and to bless it, to say thank you for it, whether it is the sweet, satisfying bread of success or the tear-soaked bread of sorrow, to say thank you and to break it because it is the only way it can be shared, and to hand it around, not to eat all by ourselves, but to find someone to eat it with, so that the broken loaf may bring us all broken ones together into one body, where we may recognize the risen Lord in our midst. There's something beautiful about the brokenness that she describes there, and about how when we come together in our brokenness, we form something much more whole. Jesus' mission of meeting that broken, meeting the broken by being broken, can be found in the most ordinary of places. It can be found in the nursing home of an elderly relative who wants to die, and the bedside of a dear friend who would have loved to have lived longer. He can be found in the squeals of a toddler in the park and the laughter and acceptance of family. He is with us in the gentle walking and talking that we do with our soulmates, joining us on the road, just like he did with those friends on the road to Emmaus. I've discovered in these last 2 weeks that Jesus can meet me and those I meet with in the ordinary as well as in the exciting. He meets us in the brokenness of everyday life, but of course he doesn't leave it broken. Just like Ezekiel's picture, he gathers those injured and frail sheep and he feeds them and he gives them rest. In our next service today at 11 o'clock, we have two examples of how he does this. And if you're not rushing off somewhere else, I'd encourage you to perhaps break the habit of a lifetime and stay for the next service. Firstly, he shows us how we can make wholeness out of brokenness in the wonderful celebration that we have of Alfie Mead's dedication today. And then he'll do it again in the sharing of broken bread together around the table to which we are all invited. Alfie's story, and he's only a year old, is one of healing in brokenness. The joy and the healing that he has brought his parents and wider family is a beautiful picture of what God can do with his injured sheep. But it's also a reminder for all of us of our relationship with the Good Shepherd. We may have been victims of bad shepherds in the past. We may have been broken by disappointment or simply wondered why God has taken us down a funny turn. Whatever our experience, the place we find wholeness and joy is in the care of the Good Shepherd. His brokenness brings our healing and joy, just as the bringing together of Alfie with his mummy and daddy has brought healing and joy for him and them. So when we are wondering why God has changed our plans, or disappointed us, or lets us go through difficult and painful places, let's be prepared to be broken in order to find real healing, and so that together we can recognize the risen Lord in our midst. Amen.